next item this evening is the Iowa School Report Card.
I think maybe while Dan and Mandy are coming up here, just for the board's appreciation, I think, in the back corner is Dr. Anthony Jones, who's picked up as the interim principal at Fellow School. Anthony, do you want to stand up for a second and let the board see who you are? As you run across from Anthony, Spence Evans, of course, the high school principal. Next to him is Pam Stanglin, the middle school principal. Steve Flynn from Meeker. Dave Peterson from Edwards. And then if we come back right in front of Dave, it's Justin Jeffs from Mitchell, Sue Lawler from Sawyer, and Brent Schroff, who's the principal at the Northwood Preschool Center. So you're all here to help answer some questions later on. And thank you guys for being here tonight for all your work.
Good evening. Dan and I are here this evening to provide you with an overview of the Iowa School Report Card and give you a little bit of background and the Ames part of that story. Additionally, as Dr. Taylor just pointed out, we've invited our building principals to join us in the event that there are some building level questions at the end of our prepared remarks. So the Iowa School Report Card is developed by the Iowa Department of Education. It's not a local initiative in any way, shape, or form. And it was developed in response to 2013 legislative requirement found in House File 215. You may recall that last year was the initial year for this report. And currently, for the 2016 school year, so it's always a year behind, there are 10 data points that are included in the report. It's important to note that out of those 10 data points, seven of them are based on Iowa assessment data. In Ames, our students in grades 3 through 11, including 9 and 10, 9, I believe, is not required by state law, but we include them in our testing, and those students take the Iowa assessment every year. And the results from those assessments are woven into the Iowa School Report Card. The report card is specific to each public school in the state of Iowa, so each school has its own unique score, but there is no score for school district.
As Dr. Roth just shared, that a significant portion of the Iowa School Report Card is based on our Iowa assessment scores. The DE was very purposeful when they designed this and that they weighted different categories differently. So when we look at this, the way it lays out this year is that actually a little more than 70% is factored in from Iowa assessments because of the fact that two of the categories aren't in our scoring yet. So they distribute those into those other categories. As we get all the categories in 3 years, at the high school level, it'll be 70%. At the lower grades, it'll be slightly more than that because some of the categories don't, graduation rate doesn't apply to middle school and elementary. In the report, you'll see that we have Ames High School, Ames Middle School, and our five elementaries, but Northwood is not there. And that's because Northwood doesn't take Iowa assessments. There are some other reports that pull data from Northwood in terms of their gold and their FAST scores, but they don't show up in this report yet. There have been questions to the DE about some of that, but I don't see that coming in right now. There are also six levels of performance: exceptional, high performing, commendable, acceptable, needs improvement, and priority. And that is the order in which they go. So exceptional is at the top, priority is towards the bottom. As you look at our particular data, you'll notice that five of our seven schools showed a positive change in their rating from last year. So the far right column. Meeker actually improved two categories. All of the buildings are in the commendable or above category, putting them above state averages. Six out of the seven buildings showed an overall score increase from year to year. The middle school did lose some ground this year, in part because several of the markers weren't used last year, and when they factored the change from they calculated them, but they didn't include them in the score. And then they calculated that based on the change. So they saw a negative change in some of those scores, being mostly the Close the Gap scores, which are actually the only calculated scores on here. They run those through a t-test to pull out a statistic that they can lay on top of the other ones. The other ones are what percentage of your students are proficient, and that factors over. So that score is very complicated to try and understand. So that's where our schools are. The other interesting thing from my seat on the bus, most of you probably won't find this very fascinating. In 2015, when they started this, they set all the schools in what we call a normal distribution. Most people here call the bell curve. And they laid out all the schools and their scores, and they used that bell curve to set the lines where they would be in the future. So the top 3% last year were exceptional. That's where we drew the line last year. When we roll that forward this year, you'll notice that only 1% of high schools in the state of Iowa are now exceptional. That as they've added things and they need some trend line to make that adjustment. But you can see as the distribution in those graphs that we're seeing a little bit of shift backwards. Accountability or acceptable went up, commendable went down, high performing went down. We see some changes like that. The other really messy thing on this DE report is the scales change. So if you look at 38% on 2015, it actually looks higher than 45% the next year, and that's based on the scale. So it's visually, this is a very difficult thing to read. Yes, this is screenshots right off the report card itself.
Do we know why they're trying to get to a bell curve? I mean, is there a reason they're trying to?
I think it's just how they establish their cut scores in the first year. And so they're not trying to get to a bell curve. I think they were just using that to establish the initial cut scores. And so that was their starting point to try to figure out where they go next.
That's the best answer I've got. So
the question might be, how as a school district do we use this information? And obviously it's a conversation with the board, with our constituents. Even though if you look at the DE's website for the Iowa School Report Card, it talks about not comparing yourself to other schools, and yet we do. Let's just be honest with ourselves. We look at ourselves against other districts, other schools in those districts, to see how we measure up. But most importantly, I think, is how we look at ourselves. And our principals have had some preliminary time to start looking at the Iowa School Report Card to get to understand their data. And most importantly, from my seat on the bus, is how they look at each other, to learn from each other and grow from each other. But I think that when you really look at how those data are presented, the DE, in order to get their scores, they cluster or group the data from reading and math together, and then they cluster grade levels together. So when we look at our Iowa assessment data, in particular at the district level, we look at those data separate of one another. We look at them by grade. We look at them by student. We look at them by cohort group. So the data in and of itself in these numbers really don't drive a lot of our conversations, other than a starting point, because our data analysis on the Iowa assessment is much more detailed than the way it's clumped together in the Iowa School Report Card. And then in terms of the report card itself, we're starting to look at trends. We've already taken the data for each of the categories that there are 2 years of data for and started looking at what's going on building by building, what's going on across the district. And one of the documents that I've shared with our principals really shows that overall, our buildings have grown in most every category. And in some cases, our buildings have taken some great leaps in some of those categories. I kind of touched on the points in this slide, in particular drilling into the data. But at a district level, one of the things we do look at is, can some of the Iowa School Report Card data inform some of our professional development needs, some of our program needs, and yet they're not really sensitive enough the way they're grouped other than, for example, attendance, staff retention. Those data sets are a little more confined, and so they do give us some information about our program and professional development. There's also a piece specific to student attendance, and we actually have now initiated at the district level an attendance committee, and our teaching and learning committee board members are part of that, at least for most of our meetings so far. And really what we're trying to do is look at our board policy, making sure that it's accurate, that it's well implemented. And so we have principals on that group, principal representatives, not all of our principals. We're looking at attendance data and our practices together. And we've also done an initial meeting with Jessica Reynolds, who is the new Story County attorney, and really looking at how we can include their support from the Story County attorney's office, not necessarily from a punitive standpoint, but really just to make sure that we've got that level of support for our families and our students when attendance becomes an issue. We also, on that committee, have Senator Kornbach, and one of the notes in that first meeting was that data reported to the Iowa Department of Education on student attendance is not reported consistently. For example, some schools could report students as being absent for school events, and others might not. So that needs to be tightened up, and with Senator Kornbach's assistance, we're hoping to get that tightened up, although I think there's conversations starting at the Department of Education. So that attendance committee will help, we believe, grow that particular attendance data set across the board for all of our students. One of the other conversations that I think might be germane to the student attendance piece, too, is the fact that in our last attendance committee meeting, there was conversation around IPI, or independent private instruction. And a couple of years ago, you may recall that the legislature determined that there could be another element to the homeschool possibilities, because in the past, homeschool families were required to register with their homeschool district and then with the Heartland, or in our case, Heartland Area Education Agency, so that we knew that students were out there and they were making growth and progress. And with IPI, the legislature determined that families can choose not to have children registered for homeschool and just independently school their children at home without any notification to any governmental reporting agency. In recent weeks, the Des Moines Register has pointed out that there are some cases where that particular initiative is being abused, and so that conversation seems to be starting up again at the legislative level. Another category in the Iowa School Report Card is staff retention. In our district, the master contract does a lot to influence our ability to for teachers to transfer from one classroom or grade to another, or from one building to another. And obviously, that makes it difficult to manage that staff retention piece because, you know, the management of the district has no control over that. So student enrollment, for example, impacts involuntary transfers. So if there's a bubble class, and I know the board is well aware that have had situations in recent years where even the second week of school we're working to hire because there's suddenly a bubble of enrollment in a particular grade level in one of our schools. Staff retention is also influenced by unique situations, and one of the ones in recent memory is when Sawyer went to Camp Sawyer, and we went from virtually a three-section building at Old Sawyer, moved them over to Edwards to Camp Sawyer, Old Edwards to Camp Sawyer, and went down to a two-section building because that's what the building would accommodate. And so consequently, the staff retention rating for Sawyer at that point in time became problematic, but not really reflective of what was going on, because we know that staff did choose to return to the building when Sawyer opened up in its remodeled condition.
This one's using us, our data to kind of look at a big picture view of things. And the data allows us to, at a certain level, compare ourselves to others. Now, when the DE lined us up, they've been very clear, one, you're not supposed to compare to everything else, and two, we want to treat these categories kind of like we do letter grades. If you get an A at 91% or you get an A at 98%, that's an A, and you're all in that same grouping together. So it is clearly not intended to rank schools, this is number one, this is number two, like many of the other things you see out there in terms of rating schools. There are obviously some limitations, and I see a lot more of them than most people probably because I'm looking at the fine details. But a couple of the big ones is that last year when I went through school by school and analyzed it in terms of the high schools, smaller schools fared better than large schools. All the class 4A schools were noticeably lower in their scores than any of those other schools. And groups with smaller subgroups, smaller than the N of 10, those scores drop out. So they only have three or four categories that affect their score. So they have much more fluctuation in their scores than we do, because what for us is 20% of our score might be 40% for those schools. And so things like staff retention, if you're in a small school where staff doesn't move buildings across the lines and things of that nature, all and they are weighted more, they're naturally going to score better at the end. So it's a very complicated report. There are lots of moving parts, but that's sort of at a really high level some of the concerns that I would say we see or limitations in this.
So the last slide shows the links to the Iowa Department of Education's press release as well as the link to the Iowa School Report Card itself. And if you dig into the Iowa School Report Card, you're going to see very quickly that we are giving you just the scratch of the surface this evening. But I think an introduction to it is in order, because as you start drilling in, you see that it, as Dan pointed out, it is very complex data, and it tells a lot, but not the entirety of our story. So at this time, we'd be happy to entertain questions you may have for us or for our principal friends behind us. So
one of the board goals this year was to define success within the Ames Community School District. And while the Department of Education has pushed this to all school districts and elected these measurements to look at, my first question is, one, are there these educational measurements that we should include in our evaluation? And then two, I know it's just a point of clarity, but understanding that we're not trying to measure against each other I think is important. And reading other periodicals and newspaper articles out there that comes to me that we shouldn't look at this specifically for how we're doing overall. I just want to highlight that. But how do we, I guess, use this information or parts of this information to help us get better moving forward?
As a matter of fact, a couple of meetings ago, the principals and administrators brainstormed some ideas of how we might define success, and that was shared with the Teaching and Learning Committee last week. And there was some overlap between the categories on the Iowa School Report Card and the list that the principals came up with. I think, you know, putting on my old dusty principal hat, that sometimes it's hard to, you know, rise to that board level of how you might define success, because the list that I shared with TLC really, there was a lot of what I would call building level data, but yet how do we translate that into the definition of success? And I know that Director Franzen mentioned that it might be something that we want to talk a little bit more at the board level about, just to start getting a little narrower focus on the meaning of success. Because if we're talking about, you know, graduation, post-graduation, do we want to look at 3 years out, how are our graduates doing, as opposed to do we want to look grade by grade by grade over time? You know, how small or large do we want to look at that? And is it during the course of the progress of a student while they're in school with us, or do we want to look at them as a product, if you will? I hate to call kids products, but, you know, just that model of looking at our kids after they graduate and what their success is looking like there. So I think, a conversation to narrow that down a little bit, and then I think we're getting ready to take another stab at that.
So of the 12 or 10 that are there, what would you consider the top three or top five? I mean, how would you rank them? I don't know if we have that agenda item to show that it lists all of them, from proficiency being 20% of the overall score. I should know from your experience, mm-hmm. what do you most value that the DE is looking at?
I think the proficiency is extremely important, but we know that there are a lot of variables that impact that proficiency. And even looking at our attendance conversations, if kids aren't at school, we can't impact their learning. And so that's why we've started to put some time and energy into really drilling into the attendance question, because that's a place where we can start getting that proficiency score, we believe, to jump up if we get those kids who, you know, might not be attending on a regular basis. But then starting that attendance challenge, that attendance push, if you will, as early as preschool, because that's where we start really developing those habits, not only with the children, but with the families, and making sure that school's important.
If I could just add one more thing. 70% of these scores are based on Iowa assessments, and I'm concerned that's the only proficiency measure in here. I would like to say, if we're going to gauge proficiency, we're going to use something a little more broad that reflects what our teachers are teaching in the classroom and targets those things a little bit better. So proficiency needs to be in your conversation. Is this the right tool to measure that is the real question.
And I would propose the answer would be no. It's too broad for us to say, yeah, we can rest on that one. And we won't rest regardless, but it's just not fine-tuned enough. I think we would both agree.
So what are the consequences if a building was in the priority category for 3 years? What would the legislature do? What are the consequences for being in that lowest category?
Yeah. At this point in time, there's nothing. However, the thing that will go into play, assuming nothing changes, is Every Student Succeeds Act is looking at identification of the lowest 5% of schools in the state of Iowa, much like No Child Left Behind had in play. And so there would be something that would take into effect with ESSA, but not necessarily with the Iowa School Report Card. I'm not so sure, and because we haven't seen the data, there's nothing in place yet where we really see what the overlap would be between Iowa School Report Card and the ESSA ratings that they're proposing, but I'm guessing that there's going to be a correlation there somewhere.
So I would kind of conclude from this presentation then that the Iowa School Report Card doesn't do much to drive our behavior. It's simply a reflection of what is, whether it's through assessments, staff retention, and attendance. And so it doesn't tell us much. We're just punching a ticket and giving the media something either good or bad to respond to. And so my gut tells me the less time we spend on this, probably the better, because there's more fruitful ways for us to impact the future than this. Is that fair?
I think it's extremely fair and accurate.
Any questions?
Yeah.
But I do
Mike,
have
actually,
one more
I do have a question. for you guys. One of the things when this data first came out, and I agree, you know, it's just the one assessment. It'd be great if it included more assessments and maybe a better assessment, which we're going to talk about in a little bit. But it is what it is, and it's the data that we've had for 3 years. When I first looked at it, I was, very proud of the leaders in our buildings, the teachers in our classrooms, and, hey, the students, because they're achieving. But there is concern, it's not just my concern, it's concerns that I've heard from people in the community regarding the middle school and the closing the achievement gap issues with our African-American students. Pretty dramatically, 30-point difference in their proficiency from the average typical student at the school. And not only that, but it's actually in the past 3 years is going in the wrong direction. This year it's 53, last year it was 59, the year before that it was 61%. So going the wrong way. So I've heard what, and I think the first step, you know, with the attendance is the right thing, but what else are we doing to address that achievement gap? It's kind of what I'd like to hear.
And really, it's a lengthy list, and
I'm so glad you asked that. I've been waiting.
Good.
This is something, again, this is not new data for us. This is something that is not new to our teachers, new to our administration. This is something that we've been looking at for longitudinally for multiple years. As a matter of fact, that has been one of the areas of focus in our building goals. January 16th, the big ice storm of the century, our professional development was geared toward just this factor. Looking at our data as it pertains to students of color, to students from different backgrounds, and saying, what are we doing? Why are these factors happening, and why are they happening continually? So our professional development this year, last year, has been working toward that. We had some work to do. We have students with lower SES that are not to that same level as well. So we're looking at this systemically, and we're making plans, professional development, and continued growth in that area. So although I'm not happy with going backwards, everyone likes to be on top. I think we will be back on top here soon. But I'm really glad that we have the opportunity to shine the light on really the work that we're doing and the work that we know we can impact. I would much rather be in a community that has a diverse population and has this opportunity to make changes than some type of community that doesn't even have diversity and just the end isn't even counting. So it's a good thing for us.
The other thing I would add to Pam's remarks are that we are actually starting a conversation later this week to be looking at, as part of our professional development, likely starting next year, some of the things that are already happening at Sawyer, and the middle school was just getting ready to start, and that is really looking at cultural competence. Do our staff really understand how to meet the needs of a diverse group of students? Because, you know, if you've been in this community for very long, you know that this community has changed over the years. And so how do we make sure that we're responsive in our instruction relative to the diverse needs of our students? Because not all of them were raised the same way we were, and we need to respond to every single one of those kids.
Pam, are there any consistent themes you're hearing from parents of this kind of group? I mean, is it something that we can help support in certain ways from the board, or?
I don't know that there's a consistent theme. There are consistent needs, and each subgroup has those needs, and I think that in our effort to treat all children equally, that has kind of been a detriment because, again, all children are not equal. They don't come to us with equal backgrounds. They don't come to us with equal benefits and equal resources. So we have done a lot at the middle school of, you know, providing meals for kids, providing backpacks for kids, providing some of those basic needs to make sure their basic needs are met when they walk into the middle school. We need to do more with the education and really informing why it's important, attendance, all of those things that fit into the whole child and help them be successful. And with our staff, you know, really making sure that we're focusing on not the same, but we need to make sure that everyone has that opportunity.
I just want to add, and I want to go back to Director Asmuset's comments earlier. We have to be very careful how we look at the report card. We're taking, you know, 70% of that is from the Iowa assessment, which is 4 days of testing. And if you know anything, the flu went through the high school like no other. This, during our testing, we were right just under 10% of our population. You have to let the health department know when you're at 10%. Throughout our whole testing period, we just started our retakes. We almost had more retakes to do than kids were finished. So I am scared about the fact of what the data is going to look like next year after going through a flu season of 4. So I would rather have a goal setting set on attendance throughout the year, achievement throughout the year, graduation rate, dropout rate when dealing with 4 years within our system, or even more than 4 years. Those are the types of goals that I want to know that I can bring my, you know, pail to work every day, and we're working to improve on those goals and can reflect the entire school year and then more school years than just 4 days out of 180-day school.
Well, that just gets into a question that, just because I'm not, there's parts of this that I'm not thrilled with, but the if we have a lot of students out during Iowa assessments, and we know that there's a, we know the statistics of how much more poorly kids test when they take a retest instead of taking it on the day that it was originally assigned, they don't put that into the data analysis, do they? Do they bump those scores back up? So if, on a year like this, if we have 10% out, we automatically know next year's scores are going to be probably off, because I mean it's they're giving us a statistical breakdown of something that we have a stat that would tell us that the stats aren't valid, but then they're still going to use the stats, right? Ah, thank you. Good. Which would go back to my other point, and this is something that Elisa and I have talked about a little bit. You know, you look at the 10 criteria here, and we keep talking about this success thing, and I know we both attended at the Iowa School Board convention one meeting that talked about goals, talked about simply if districts or schools have, I think the data was if they had two goals, they completed two of their goals. If they had 2 to 3 goals, they completed 2 to 3 of their goals. If they had 5 goals, they completed 2 of their goals. If they had more than 5 goals, which is exactly what this list is, they completed 1 or 0 of their goals. We've got a list of 10 goals here. You're not going to focus on all 10 of those things and be able to succeed. So then the question is, how do we simplify that? Which goes back to defining that success. And
right. And I can tell you the group, and I'm a part of that group, and so is Pam, and then so as well as an attendance group. The biggest concern that we have right now is that our kids are in the seats at our school because we believe our teachers can do the job of teaching them if they're there. Mm-hmm. And so a big push for attendance right now to make sure that's happening. We have to get better. We have to get our kids to school. That has to become a community issue, not just a school issue. And it's kind of like how character counts flew through school, our communities. The push for attendance and to be at school has to be the number one thing that I think drives us. Because whether a child is sick, skipping school, suspended, they're all the same thing. They're not there at school learning, and that's what we want.
Any other questions? Discussion? It's been a good discussion. Thank you. Okay. Moving on to Smarter Balance.